Previously on Outcast. Juan Jacobs.
The insiders call it curb.
Don Smith.
Slow down just a little bit.
Dwayne Taylor.
I need to switch to decaf.
Mark Fessler.
Determine what their roles are for that particular user.
Monty Wall.
I'm actually working for a school system.
All right, welcome back, friends, to ArtCast. Hey, this is Ron Jacobs, your host, bringing you once again more architecture inspiration. This time, we are coming back to the second half of the Patterns and Practices live webcast called Web Services Security Patterns Authenticating with Kerberos Tokens with WYSIWYG3o. Boy, that's a mouthful. I think I got that wrong somehow. But anyway, there is a lot of information involved in this webcast. It's just tremendous deliverable from Patterns and Practices. If you're doing web services and you need security, you should definitely look at this material. And so today we have a full house in studio where we're having a great time kind of walking through the issues around when and why Kerberos tokens and how it works with WYSIWYG3. It will give you some insight into Indigo as well. So let's join the broadcast already in progress.
Don, you know, one of the things that people probably wonder is, well, I mean, how real is this? This is not just like a sample application, because it's kind of funny. When I first started at Microsoft, one of my early jobs was to work on the Windows SDK on a certain part of it. I won't say which part, but I found that many of the sample applications just plain old didn't work, or, you know, were very poorly written. But you guys actually have a test team that has tested this stuff, and it's guaranteed it works.
Yeah, it does. And the reason we call these quick starts, we have a number of different kind of guidance deliverables at Patterns and Practices. Some of those are reference implementations, which also are like sample apps, but they really are. They've had full-blown security reviews. They've had performance testing, load testing, a lot more things. These quick starts are like a step down from that. Typically, a quick start sample application is trying to illustrate a feature of a product. This is somewhere in between. It is illustrating features and extensibility points of WYSI, which is, of course, a fantastic product, but it's also showing how to do things, and that's the guidance part of
how
it.
How to solve the problem.
How to solve the problem. So how to work out, how to put the SPNs in your policy file, how to actually get the code to work in policy and so forth. So, yeah, it's definitely addressing a need for guidance, but I wouldn't say that the security testing, the performance testing on these quick starts is quite at the level that of our normal patterns and practices. That's why we pushed it to the community, because people wanted to see the code, but you know, we didn't want to have to take forever getting it to them.
Right, right. Okay, but there is actually a sample application for the WSI security-based profile, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That we have now. That is definitely a reference implementation, because that's undergone a whole lot more testing than these quick starts. So that's definitely not a quick start. That's the basic security profile sample that we call it a sample application only because the WSI does, but it's in reality a reference implementation from Patterns and Practices.
Okay, great. All right, so on to some considerations, some other design points that we have to decide on. Derived keys or no derived keys? What do we do?
Well, the decision points there are, you know, derived keys is something that in order to use, you have to understand WS Secure Conversation. It's a great mechanism for providing different key material on each message for encrypting and signing. But at the same time, again, it requires an understanding of WS Secure Conversation to do that. On the downside, from the security standpoint, is you're not using fresh key material every time if you don't use a derived key. So if you were to use the session key, for example, to sign and encrypt a message, or at the very minimum to encrypt it, you know, it would be more susceptible to offline cryptographic attack, because an attacker, you know, if it was encrypted with the same key for several messages, could collect several messages and you know, have an easier time of breaking them, even though it still would be hard.
Okay, but I thought this was like I check a box in the wizard and it does it.
It is.
I think what Dwayne means by understanding secure conversation is not that you personally have to read through this big log heavy spec.
Okay,
and,
good.
And, oh, no.
Thanks.
The service has to have the ability to consume messages that conform to WS Security conversation profile.
Yeah, you as a human being don't necessarily have to understand.
That's what I want to use.
Okay, because, you know, if those guys...
It is a checkbook.
If those guys at the CTU counterterrorism unit start trying to decrypt my messages, I'm toast, all right?
Right.
All right, so, okay, there's some extensibility points. We talked earlier about this advanced scenario of Kerberos and a web farm. Lonnie, what's the big deal about that? How does that differ?
Well, in a basically in a web farm, you're accessing multiple computers, so you don't really know which computer that you're going to access. And if you use the default service principal name to request access to a service, then you're not going to be able to the service will not be able to decrypt the message or validate the token. So what you need to do is use a common service principal name or common account across all computers in the web farm and map the service principal name to that account so that the service ticket that's collected from the KDC when you do the request against the TGS to get a service ticket, that service ticket can then be validated on all of the computers in the web farm because all computers would be running the same service account.
Okay, I get that.
Okay.
And okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the way to do that basically, again, is to create the service account and then use the set SPN tool to map the SPN to that service account. There's a couple of different types of SPNs, host-based SPN, which is the default type of SPN, and then just an arbitrary SPN. In this case, the arbitrary SPN would be an option, so you can basically create your own service class and your own service name and just an arbitrary name and map it to that service account, and then the client would use that SPN to access the services in the web farm.
Okay. And what's this about configuring constrained delegation? What does that do?
Well, constrained delegation allows a service to use a service ticket that was presented for authentication to then request another service ticket to access a downstream resource. In order for constrained delegation to work, it has to be running on Windows Server 2003, and the service itself has to be configured to access downstream resources. So the configuration is that the service that is attempting to request another service ticket to access a downstream resource.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, this setspn.exe is that pretty easy to find? Where do people get that?
It's in the it's in a toolkit. The I can't remember the name of the exact toolkit. It's a Windows toolkit, and we do have it. We have links to it or information that provides links to it in the Web Service Security Patterns document.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's in the Windows Server 2003 toolkit.
Right.
As you download that, there's a number of utility tools there for configuring aspects of a Windows Server.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And the technical supplement in the Web Service Security Patterns documentation talks in depth about SetSPN, as well as some other tools that are in the Server Toolkit that allow you to troubleshoot any issues that you might have with service principal names. One of the common problems is to map the same service principal names to multiple accounts. And if you accidentally do that, then it's not going to work. So there's some information that tells you how to troubleshoot and how to identify what accounts are mapped to a service principal name.
That is I love that because that's the kind of thing I would do. I would accidentally do that, and then I didn't feel like spending a week trying to figure out why. This is why this is so valuable.
Yeah, we actually have a whole technical supplement in the guide for constrained delegation, how to set it up.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, and then another advanced scenario, accessing downstream resources using Windows Integrated Security. So by that, I guess you mean if there was another web service inside an enterprise where it's just using Windows Integrated Security, I have to do something special there?
Well, the main constraint there is that Windows Integrated Security uses the HTTP SPN to access downstream resources. So in the case that you have created a domain service account, for instance, on a service, you need to map the HTTP SPN to that service account in order for integrated security to work. If you're just using the standard network service account or the standard accounts, there's really nothing that you need to do. except use the HTTP SPN.
Okay. These are the kind of things that just throw developers off because they feel like, you know, infrastructure things that they just don't learn about, right, in developer school. Right. Okay, so we have a second demonstration. And is Duane, you're going to do this one also?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to see that downstream resource thing. Let's fire that up.
Well, basically what this is already in the quick start code that we have for the web service security stuff. The scenario is where you've got a client and a service that use message layer Kerberos, and the service then turns around and calls another service that uses Windows Integrated Security. So it's kind of a transition from message layer security to transport layer security while leveraging the existing Kerberos infrastructure. And and it's just another leg on the journey. We had a client, our service, which we already walked through in the first demo, and then we have a second service. So now, effectively, what we're doing is we're calling that second service using Windows Integrated Security. And we're impersonating the user since we set the impersonation level on our Kerberos token to impersonation. And the second service is, again, just a simple service with Windows Integrated Security configured. So if you go into IIS, you disable anonymous, enable Windows Integrated. The service is doing at this point, and let me pull up the service code, is just like a client would calling a web service using Kerberos. What we're doing is we're using since we're impersonating the user, we're using the default credentials off the credential cache, and we're calling the web service. And under the covers, what's happening is, the Kerberos token is being stuck into the HTTP header and consumed on the service, just like for Windows Integrated.
Right. This is one thing that trips up a lot of people is the switch to integrated security requires you to add the default credentials to the service credentials in order to pass the token. So that's a really important thing to point out there.
Yeah. Right here.
All right. Excellent.
And that's the extension of the scenario.
All right. So I'm sure if you ran it, it would totally work. So I don't know that we need to run anything.
Well, it's the exact same execution as the first one.
Oh, okay. So. Good. Well, see, there you go. Well, hey, and we are already to a session summary. So that is wonderful timing because, normally we're running so long on these. All right, so this is just really great work that you guys have done. A number of our listeners have been saying, wow, this is totally saving me. I can't believe how great this is going to be to have this. So I really encourage everybody to take a look. If you got to do WSSI, Web Service Security, there is just a ton of stuff that's going to help you with it. And for more information, we have the Web Services Security Guidance. There's a link there where you can go to. And the community workspace, which, Don, is not just for go download the quick starts, but you can ask questions there also,
oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's forums and all kind of things. There's other resources there. There's a really good community of people that are – I think there's over 1,000 members now that you'll probably hear from one of the developers, from one of us, but you could also hear from one of the other community members that have done these things. So it's a great resource for web service security.
Yeah, because a lot of times people will send me questions on email asking about Enterprise Library or whatever, and I just say, look, go to the community and ask the question, because if I just answer on email, that one person saw the answer, but nobody else in the community can benefit from that. So it's great to have these questions and answers out in the open. And speaking of which, we have a couple of future webcasts coming up. We have the future is today. But there's one more next week where we're going to be doing authentication to web services with the good old username token, woo-hoo, the blast from the past. And we're glad to have that one still around. But we have time now for some questions and answers. So for those of you who've been kind of passively listening and wondering what to do, now is the time to type in your question. And so here's a question. I'm not sure I understand the question. I'm going to read it verbatim here, and so you guys can tell me if you understand it. Domain account that is mapped to an HTTP service and SQL service through SPN should be the same for both services in a web farm, SQL and IIS. Okay, so maybe this is not a question, but a comment. He's making a point about if you're using maybe integrated security with SQL. Is that what he's saying?
There's actually a separate SPN for SQL Server that SQL Server recognizes. We do have it documented in the web server security patterns in the technical supplement. I, off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is, but if you're doing integrated security with SQL Server, you do have to map a special SPN that identifies the service class, service name, and a port that SQL Server listens on.
Okay. Hey, before we answer any more questions, by the way, let's go to the back to our producer, Eric, who's going to talk to you about the survey and the end of all this. So, Eric, let's do that, and then we'll come back and do some more questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. While you're answering questions here, you can go ahead and fill out the survey. There are two options, either registered online or all other registrants. Just please select the one that applies to you. We really value your feedback on that. But with that, I'm going to turn it right back to you and the gang, Ron. You can go ahead and continue answering your questions. Got about 10 minutes left here.
I love that. And I am so used to being like, oh, we're out of time. You know, we got to... Okay, so we got the survey link up there. So make sure you give us your feedback. And by the way, I really love it when people type comments on the survey. I know I'm kind of the kind of person that hates spending a lot of time doing surveys, but if you want to type some friendly comments, some nice things like, I really think Don should get a raise, or whatever, you know, things
Amen.
Like that.
Amen.
You know, make sure you throw those in there. All right. All right, so here's somebody wondering the exact way to map the ASP.NET account to the Windows Service account through code, as you mentioned. Getting puzzled looks here. What does that mean?
Well, as far as mapping, if you're just using the default ASP.NET account, you can use that out of the box unless you're running in a web farm, for example.
Okay.
And again, it depends on your the platform. Windows Server 2003, that should work out of the box for you.
Right. I think there's two different things that you really have to think about here. With Windows Server 2003, the ASP.NET process account is driven by the application pool that you're running in. So the default credentials that are used would be network service, which is the default application pool. But when you're, if you want to use a separate domain service account, then you need to configure a new application pool to use that service account. On Windows XP, if you're deploying a service for any reason, maybe an internal service that you're deploying on XP, it's a lot different. You have to go into the machine config file and map the ASP.NET process to a user account in machine config.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of what they were asking.
Okay, gotcha. And
there's actually a series of articles on MSDN about how to do security and ASP.NET version 1.1 and 1.2 that we should try and find the link and point to. They're all best practices about how you set up a domain account for a particular ASP.NET service and use that. Basically, it's the same principle.
Where do you find those links from the WYSI page?
Those are the ones that were done by, I think it's done by the Patterns and Practices team before, J.D. Myers.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Ah, yes, our good friend J.D.
The J.D. Meyer, yes.
Yeah.
Who has a ton of security guidance out there, by the way. Everybody should go and browse that stuff. That is really great.
Yeah, I'll find it real quick.
Okay. So another one here. What special consideration do I need to consider to configure the server side for a local installation of IIS 5.1? Now, I'm a little confused by that because I thought IIS 5.1 is the IIS that's on Windows XP. Would that be somebody running XP as sort of a logical server, I guess, hosting? Was that what you were talking about, Lonnie?
Yeah, that's basically what I was talking about. There are cases where, probably more on an intranet, where you might run services on Windows XP, and if you want to map a specific service account, then you have to go in and configure machine config to use a different account for the process.
But Windows XP's IIS is throttled in some way, isn't it? I mean, is that a good idea?
It's not a recommended practice. You definitely want to use a Windows Server platform, Windows Server 2003, preferably, to host services. But you know, there in a development environment, especially, there are cases where you would need to set something up under Windows XP, and we do cover that in the guidance. We provide some pretty detailed information on how to use Windows XP. One of the things that we recommend against using is the system account. You can go in and map the system account to the ASP.NET process on XP, and be able to take advantage of impersonation and things like that, and delegation. However, that's a very, very risky thing and something that we recommend against.
Oh, but I run all my services under the system account. Come on. All right. No, that's a bad idea. Don't do that at home. I'm a trained professional. Okay. No. All right. So here's another question. When I installed WYSI 3.0, it was installed in a directory under My Documents. Since the ASP.NET account didn't have permissions on that folder, I had lots of trouble in putting the hands-on lab to work. Are you aware of that?
No, we're not aware of that. That may have been because it would be good to know which particular part of the hands-on labs. A lot of the time when you get to the certificate section of the labs, you have to enable the certificate of access. The private keys have to be accessed from your particular ASP.NET account. And that particular directory where you've installed it from may be running under, well, be running under your account. So that's a certificate. So no, it'd be good to know which part of the hands-on labs we're having issues with there, because we just install them normally somewhere inside your...
Oh, right.
Okay. Can you provide some more details? It'd be good if you had some more details about which part of the hands-on labs were failing.
Okay, great. And is there a link where people can send feedback about the hands-on lab in there somewhere?
The good place to talk about the hands-on labs if you have difficulties is on the web services forums.
Okay, so if they go to the MSDN Web Services Dev Center,
yes,
they'll get a link to the forums for web services.
Yes.
Okay, so that'd be a good place to post that, details or questions about that. Okay, or they could just send email to me and I won't know. All right. All right, so here's another one. Can I expose my KDC to the untrusted world, the internet, in a semi-secure way? Well, that's kind of scary, isn't it? Semi-secure?
Yeah. The easy answer to that is no.
Okay.
That's a safe answer.
Yeah, that's the safe answer. I mean, there are things that you can do to wrap it, you know, to be able to call it and, you know, put another layer of a barrier there. You know, I've seen and heard of people doing things like read-only replication, domain controllers, and the DMZ and some other things like that. But, you know, generally, as a general practice, you know, I personally wouldn't do that. I wouldn't expose my security infrastructure to the outside world.
I think there's two ways you can approach this question. So one way I think about it is that you can combine the Kerberos token and using that authentication with a token type like username password. Mm-hmm. And so typically the scenario could be you've got someone out there on the internet and they would use a username password to talk to your application server. And in turn, you would go off and authenticate that username password that they provided and got a Kerberos ticket at the application server and then use that to talk to another web service inside your intranet. So that's it. That's a very classic scenario where username passwords used to authenticate from the internet to an application server you have on your intranet, and inside your intranet, you then map that username account to a particular account inside your Active Directory and use that to communicate further with inside your intranet. So that's one way of doing it. Another thing you can also do is that you can have inside your DMZ, you can have a domain controller there that has a trust that just goes out, as it were. So you may have all your user accounts inside your intranet and another domain controller inside the DMZ that has a one-way trust relationship. So you can effectively trust against the people inside, get hold of a ticket inside your intranet, but of course your domain controller inside your internet is safe from the trust domain going out towards the Kerberos domain controller inside the intranet. So that's another way of doing that, sort of semi-trust.
Is there another way to do it with Atom, where you've linked Atom with an Active Directory? Is that effectively what you're talking about?
Yeah, you could use Atom.
You could use Atom instead of another domain controller with a trust relationship, but just link it up. I don't know if that's suggested.
Right.
From a
security
perspective.
The other thing too is, you know, a lot of it depends on how you're exposing it. In the case of Atom, you know, you could be exposing it via LDAP. So
yeah,
you know, that may provide you a little more flexibility to communication across your boundaries. And again, depending upon how you secure the communication, you know, on the LDAP connection. I would tend probably towards a scenario of, you know, putting some sort of authentication service or an STS out in your DMZ that knows how to go back and talk to the KDC, you know, if someone authenticates via username and password, kind of provide that layer of, you know, that intermediary out in the DMZ, and it doesn't directly expose your KDC out,
okay,
out to the world.
So is this a pattern that's discussed in the book?
Actually, it would be a combination of two patterns. It would be a combination of direct authentication and brokered authentication.
Okay.
So that would be more of a kind of a larger scenario, I think. But it would the essential pieces to make that happen are there. You could compose that scenario.
So good. It's not available in the guide. It's not available as a pattern in the guide.
Yeah.
I think that the decision points for Kerberos are typically for internal type services, right? Not really. We're not trying to fit Kerberos for external consumption, I believe.
The guide also covers a scenario with protocol transition and constrained delegation where direct authentication could be used to authenticate kind of what you were talking about earlier, except you can use direct authentication or, say, username token authentication with an account that is part of the domain and then transition that into a Kerberos token using protocol transition. So that's a another way to transition into Kerberos from the outside world.
Okay. All right. So let me just ask one other question here. This is probably the last one we're going to get to on this webcast. But it says here, the Patterns and Practices Guide states that to authenticate against anything besides Active Directory or SQL Server, I would have to customize the membership provider. But I was able to authenticate against a COMPLUS authentication component. I'm not sure what that means.
Derived
from username token manager. Are you aware of that? But got me off guard. I don't know.
I think I see what they're saying here. This is kind of a distinction between a username token manager, which is actually used to process the token off the pipeline in WSI, whereas kind of what we're talking about with the role and membership providers is the layer of abstraction that ASP.NET 2.0 provides you so that you can just make calls in a username token manager to get roles for user or I think it's what is it, validate credentials, or I can't remember exactly what the method signature is, but I think what kind of the point to that was WSI ships with a default username token manager out of the box that authenticates against a domain. You've got the option of using a custom username token manager. The ones that we provided in the quick start code, rely on the underlying ASP.NET 2.0 role and membership providers to provide authentication and role information for users.
Okay. Well, hey, you guys have been so great. And by the way, to all the listeners who are thinking, man, I want to hear that again, or I wish so-and-so could have heard that, there will be a recording of this webcast available on MSDN. But I will also be taking the in-studio recording we've made here today and converting that into a high-fidelity CD-quality audio Artcast, okay? So there'll be a couple of those on Channel 9 in about a week or so. So you'll want to go to channel9.msdn.com and look for the Artcast show, along with many other finely tuned episodes that you will enjoy. So thanks a lot to my guest, Mark, Dwayne, Lonnie, Don. You guys rock. See you next time on Patterns and Practices Live.
Ah, memories. Memories of my time in the Patterns and Practices team. And what a team that is. You know, they do some great, great stuff. I was just checking out some of the new security guidance and things that J.D. Meyer has done. And one of my Artcast guests, Keith Brown, was doing some kind of screencast things with them. Way cool stuff. There is so much to learn. And they are a great team, a great resource. I'm going to have much more of them on my show, Artcast. And so you can look forward to seeing that. We have another one of these web service security patterns webcasts coming up soon where we'll talk about the username token, which sounds kind of boring compared to X509 and Kerberos, which are really sexy. But hey, we got to cover the boring too here on Artcast.